So President Obama has managed to secure enough support in Congress for the multi-nation nuclear deal with Iran. But one of our staunchest allies remains opposed, and it's going to take a lot more than a few billion dollars in military aid to bring that country around. Here's Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu after the deal was announced in July.
The bottom line of this very bad deal is exactly what Iran's President Rouhani said today. The international community is removing the sanctions, and Iran is keeping its nuclear program.
Prime Minister Netanyahu represents a distinct strain of Israeli society, a politician who meets opposition with strength and power. And that's a contrast with someone like former Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin, at least Rabin in his later years. He advocated accommodation and negotiation with Palestinians.
We who have fought against you, the Palestinians, we say to you today, in a loud and a clear voice, enough of blood and tears. Enough.
Alon Gratch is a clinical psychologist, and he charts that divide in his new book. It's called The Israeli Mind. He says the debate between the realists and the moralists goes back thousands of years in Israel, and it's a divide that's made a deep impression on the Israeli psyche.
Going back all the way 2,000-3,000 years ago, prior to the destruction of the First Temple, there was this constant strife between the realists who were seeking independence and the moralists, the prophets, who advocated accommodating. And that strife, that civil war of sorts, actually was the causes, one of the causes for the destruction of the First Temple. And similarly, the destruction of the Second Temple was related to internal strife within the Judaic society then. And then continuing from there all over through 2,000 years of exile, there was a divide between the right wing and the left wing in today's language. This is just one divide within Israeli society. There are many others. It has become a very tribal society where there's a constant fragmentation. And when you grow up and live or reside in a society like that, you become both very rigid and very passionate.
Now, your book has a warning in this regard because Americans, not just American Jews, but lots of Americans, see Israel as such a strong ally because we see part of ourselves in modern Israeli society. We see a liberal democracy. There's a warning in your book that says ultra-Orthodox religious forces are on the rise in Israel. There are many places where you would not expect where women are not allowed to share a stage with a man. These are things that Americans would not recognize when they see their ally Israel.
That's correct, because Israelis have been really, really good at what they call hasbara, which is really public relations, and in highlighting the liberal nature of society. And it's a very much a dualistic society. It has these wonderful liberal progressive values, but there is another reality in many places, including most particularly in Jerusalem, of a culture that is ultra-Orthodox, that is repressive of women. And the problem is an entire justification for the existence of Israel historically really has been religion. The whole narrative of going back to the biblical home of the Jews is a religious narrative.
At the same time, Israel came into existence as a direct result of the Holocaust, and lots of writers and observers before you, Dr. Gratch, have made a psychological analysis or observation of the Israeli psyche, that coming out of the horror and the experience of the Holocaust, that Israel is like a child of abuse, was abused horribly, came into existence, and has wound up being fearful, defensive, and in some ways an abuser itself. I'm interested in your view on that, on the modern Israeli psyche after the Holocaust and after the abuse that Jews endured before they got to Palestine.
The notion that you're alluding to has been captured by W.H. Auden in his famous poem, September 1st, 1939, where he wrote, "Those to whom evil is done do evil in return." The idea is that it's a kind of a syndrome akin to the Stockholm syndrome, where in order to overcome powerlessness, you identify with the abuser in some sense in order to protect yourself, and therefore you end up abusing other people. I have to say that, and I say that in the book repeatedly, that whatever Israeli bad behavior is in no way, shape, or form equivalent to what the Nazis did. Now, initially, in the first period after the Holocaust, the whole question of the Holocaust was a taboo in Israeli society. The media talked about it, the politicians talked about it, the museums, there were poetry and books were read, but it was always about the 6 million. It was never about the individual stories of people, of survivors. Until the trial of Adolf Eichmann back in 1961, where Israelis for the first time heard about all the horrors that Holocaust survivors went through. And that opened the floodgates and started a kind of a national therapy for the entire country. And by the 1990s, most Israelis, if you were to ask them, and there were scientific surveys that showed that most Israelis identified themselves as survivors. And every national security decision that happens in Israel to this very day is colored by this. So into that, of course, stepped the Iranian Revolution in 1979. And when you had Iranian leaders who deny the Holocaust, who call to wipe Israel off the map, and attempt to develop nuclear capabilities, that trifecta reawakened this entire narrative of the whole world is against us and the world is silent.
When Israelis look at this deal, and maybe we get away from Likud versus Labor, the anxiety that underlies Israel's discomfort with this deal, is it about the specifics of the deal, or is it more about the United States, its staunch ally, having a discussion, sitting at a table with Iran? It seems to me that just the act of a negotiation, any type of deal, would be enough to send a lot of Israeli society into a state of anxiety.
I think that that particular aspect of it, the actual sitting at the table negotiating, the reaction to that is what the politicians are focusing on. I think the fundamental resistance comes from these twin emotions of anxiety and rage. So it's not so much the particular of the deals. It's the idea that Iran has threatened to wipe Israel off the map, that it denies the Holocaust. That part of it is huge. That denial of the Holocaust is huge because that is the essence of what the Israeli state was supposed to react to respond to. And this ties back, by the way, to the question that we talked about before in terms of identification with the aggressor or the Stockholm syndrome, right? Because the essence of the experience of the Holocaust beyond the horrors was utter and complete helplessness. There was nothing that the Jews could have done. And these are exactly the positions. Total helplessness, where a child, for example, identifies with the aggressor because they try to lend some sense of control to the situation. So they become like the abuser. So the existence of an Iranian regime with these kind of attitudes bring back these feelings of helplessness. And that's why the Israelis cannot accept this kind of deal. Something must be done. And the thing to do is to attack and to in a preemptive way and to destroy the Iranian nuclear capabilities.
Dr. Alon Gratch is a clinical psychologist. He's author of the new book, The Israeli Mind. Dr. Gratch, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.